right. Good morning, good afternoon, should I say, to everyone. I'm so used to doing this show in the morning time, and now we have started at 12 noon. So, like I said, I'm so used to calling or telling everyone good morning at 10 a.m. So it's 12:02 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. So I hope everyone is well and you are enjoying the first part of your morning, or that you have enjoyed your first part of the morning, and hope that you will enjoy your afternoon as well. On today's show, we're going to be talking about a host of different topics. We'll discuss the parole process here in Georgia, and how that works. Kind of give everyone some insights on how that goes, and then we'll also be talking about the numbers from COVID-19 this week, and just update you guys on that stuff. Then we'll also be talking about the uprising and violence that's taking place right now at numerous facilities around the state, Macon State, Telfair State Prison, Hancock State Prison, a host of just of violence that has been on the uprise and things of that nature. So, let's kick off our show right now. I'm going to bring in Susan Sparks. I believe she is holding with us right now. I'm going to bring her in and kind of kick off the show and see how things can go. Susan, are you with me?
Yes, I am. Good morning, everybody. I'm going to start with the COVID update. Last week, a week ago today, yesterday at 6 p.m., the counts were 157 staff cases and 407 inmate cases. As of yesterday afternoon at 6 p.m., we have two new staff cases, one each at Dooley and Rutledge, for a total of 163, so up by five in a week. Oh, pardon me, up by six in a week. And we have two new inmate cases, one each at GDCP and Valdosta TC, bringing the total to 413, up from 407, so the same increase as the staff had. However, there's some differences. There are also six cases at GDCP that aren't being counted as GDCP cases. They're broken out separately. Those are intake inmates who have been tested for COVID and tested positively. So we apparently brought in six from the county jails to the prison. Now, we've seen reports all these last 2 weeks of inmates who were transported from Jackson either being symptomatic upon arrival at their new prison or becoming symptomatic afterwards. It's been a mixed bag of what has actually happened. When GDC announced that they were going to be transporting, we go back to that, they said that inmates would be placed in quarantine for 2 weeks upon arrival at a new facility. And that is being done at many of the facilities, but not at all of them. There are also prisons where masks are not being worn. An inmate who ought to know sent me the information that as of this coming Monday, the masks will be taken up and confiscated. He compared it to how coats are treated in the spring, that they make an announcement they're going to take them up, And if you don't turn yours in when they do inspection, they confiscate it. So that has been announced at least one facility. But many others report that you may be getting reprimanded for not having their masks on, but they're being reprimanded by staff that doesn't have their masks on. So it's inconsistent at best, and it's concerning, all of this. Other things are going on as well. There's more and more normal movement, people going to chow, going to the gym, classes, showers, and so forth. There's other things going on that are causing increased tension. A number of the prisons are short of merchandise in their stores and their commissary. Some of them have implemented limits on soup. Others have no fans. Some have announced they're discontinuing store. And coming on top of the last 3 months, this is, you know, I say this almost every week, it's a pressure cooker at its best. And now we've had 3 months of tension regarding COVID, and still have had at least 416 cases. Those are confirmed cases. The actual cases may be closer to 800. But we're not privy to the secrets of what goes on behind those doors, but a number of the facilities have not just a single dorm, but two or even three that have people in quarantine and people who are sick. So
right.
All that being said, this disease is still out there. Well, this virus is still out there. And a great deal of things are changing. The spraying of the bleach has stopped in large part. The spraying with the fog, when they fogged all those facilities a month or so ago, they said that they would do that monthly. Well, don't hold your breath. So tensions are rising, and it's being reflected in what's going on with all over the state, frankly. Okay, well, Josh, we're back to you.
Well, and I want to stay right here for a second, if I can, because I think this is very important, and I just want to, to touch on this briefly, if I can. So we know that the numbers are rising. We know that, and I say that, I don't care if it's two or three cases, if it's four cases. I mean, those numbers are adding to the overall deficit, I guess, if that's the correct word. But the numbers are rising, and we have GDC officials who are telling judges for people that are filing these sentence modifications. I was speaking with a loved one earlier this week, and they actually filed a sentence modification to get their loved one home because they didn't have much time left. But they actually filed a sentence modification, and a judge contacted the Georgia Department of Corrections, and the Georgia Department of Corrections assured the Superior Court judge that they had this virus and they had the whole situation under control. But you continue to see that the numbers are rising. You continue to see, and if you followed his show or if you follow anything that has transpired the last 2.5 months, you can definitely see that this virus caught the Georgia Department of Corrections off guard, and it caught them with their pants down, so to say, that they were not prepared for this virus. And now we're seeing that they opened back transfers, and that now, since they negligently opened back up transfers, that they're now spreading the virus to institutions that didn't even have the virus, Susan. And now you're starting to see other cases popping up at institutions. You're starting to see gyms filling up as quarantine spots or dorms on these compounds filling up as quarantine spots. But the Department of Corrections are telling people that they have this under control. And then, to add insult to injury, you're having people that's locked down at these facilities, and you're not letting them bathe or take a shower for the last 10 days. But you have this under control. I mean, am I missing something?
No.
And like I said, you know, so I just don't understand the priority of the GDC. I'm kind of lost for words. You know, they're adding fuel to the fire. You know, you're asking people to stay on lock. I mean, you're asking these guys to behave. And you're locking them in cells, and you're locking them in cages for like animals, and not giving them showers or the other stuff that they need to survive, and then you expect them to, you know, to act like human beings. I just don't get it. Susan, you want to add anything else?
You know, the things we've seen this week, honestly, were of a greater magnitude than what we've seen in the past. There've been uprisings all over the place in the past, but this is going on at several of the prisons and things we have not seen before. Earlier this week at Macon State Prison, tear gas canisters, and they're actually a triple canister that contains three separate chemicals, and it's bound together like with banding. And it's clearly on the spec sheet for the item that it is not to be used indoors. It's for riot control, crowd control, outdoors. And the reason is it's got a canister of tear gas, a canister of pepper spray, and then a flashbang canister for noise and fire. And the reason for not using it inside is the fire potential. And those were shot into a cell house at Macon by the tax squad. And I do believe that really happened, because we saw the video, and there was a video, a really good shot of one of the spent canisters. And so, you know, I've got Google, so I found out where it came from and who made it and how it's supposed to be used. But used in the prison, inside, we've seen a warden last week, a week ago, either today or tomorrow, aim and discharge a pepper ball gun in the cell house. He was standing next to a door with one female officer. He could have just opened the door and walked out and get the cert team or whatever, but this guy went in there with this gun, and when he shot it, it lost at least a 6-foot stream of fire with it. I was flabbergasted. Then we've had riots this week at Jackson, Macon. Telfair last night ended up having a murder and his back locked down. Those poor guys there have been locked down in one form or another, had their communications cut off. Basically, since the end of February, they've had a few days here and there. where they could get in touch with somebody. But otherwise, they are cut off.
And Susan, these are the same people, and I'll let you continue to say, but these are the same people that continue to deny different organizations to even provide soap for the population. This is that same crew at Macon State that we see dispersing pepper ball guns and denying showers for 10 days. These are the same people that's denying outside groups to donate cosmetic items to their population. But go ahead and continue.
That is absolutely true that they denied them a sizable donation of a good brand of antibacterial soap and really gave no reason except we're not accepting contributions. And on the very same day that another prison got a contribution of soap. It's hard to understand this, but we've got some wildcats in charge in some places in the behavior that, or rather the activities that are going on there need a closer look. This is frightening. I mean, it was to me, especially to see this warden discharge that gun. He wasn't playing, and that was no toy.
And Susan, by looking at that video, you didn't see anyone from and I saw that video, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I could be wrong because I'm not always right. But correct me if I'm wrong. It appeared that entire dorm was locked down because I didn't see anybody out running around in that particular video. It looked like everyone appeared to be behind the door. So it seems like this warden was taking his frustration. It looked like he had regained control and possibly locked everyone down. Because some of the people that was heckling at him and saying some things to him, it looked like he just got anger and decided to disperse that gun. I mean, is that what you saw as well?
You know, the video appeared to have been taken from a second tier up top, and the officer, the warden, must have been 40 or 50 feet away from the guy that was videoing, and there was not one inmate in that space. He was not in danger for his life, and he was standing right, and I mean like one step he could have reached the door, standing within 3 feet of the door, 4 feet maybe. He could have left. Where's the 13? Where is his backup? In there by himself, and he brought a gun.
And so Susan, let's just close this topic or this particular situation at Macon State by saying this, that it appears that the current administration at Macon State has completely lost control of their facility. I mean, that's not hard to figure out, and it's just not now became known that they've lost that prison. But I think now what we need to be asking all of the advocacy groups and the general public is, what are we going to do to now gain control over these prisons that has been lost? And it's not just Macon State. There's Telfair, there's Hancock, there's GSP that's also been lost. You can put these wardens in these places for just so long, but when are we going to finally start seeing that human life is more important than whatever they have going on? Because As you know, violence is still taking place in these rooms, Macon State. The last two weekends, people's been cellmates and people have been killing each other in the room with each other. I mean, they've still been on lockdown and are still able to kill each other. And it's not just happening, like I said, at Macon State. It's happening at Telfair. And I can probably bet, Susan, and I'm sure you agree with me, if we dug very deep into this, we can probably tell that these people that were in the room together probably wasn't even supposed to be in the room with each other anyway.
Well, that's as likely as not, as sad as that is to say.
I mean,
my understanding was they were not enemies, that they were both doing scripts, and that went really badly.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at that video of the two guys that came out that were doing the strips, and both of them came out bloody, you know, that situation there was just so uncalled for. They didn't even have any type of medical staff whatsoever
no.
to come and to try to save to do the best that they could to even save that person. You know, so, you know, it's heartbreaking right now what's going on. But, you know, our advocacy groups we're going to have to stand up and step up and demand that necessary change comes about in these places, because until we do, Susan, you know, it's just as bad now. I mean, I agree 100% with what you just said a few minutes ago, that we are now seeing things that we've never saw in these departments. We're now seeing riots taking place. We're now seeing that we're now seeing that technical squads who are supposed to be the GDC best squad that they have can't even have control of a building. I saw one of those videos. I saw one of those videos where a guard tried to shut the door. Get people back into their cell, and this guy completely ran completely over the officer, opened the door, and continued to let others out of their cells, and this officer just walked away. So we are going to have to put our heads together. We're going to have to come up with some things that we can do, because time is of the essence. I hate to say this, Susan, and, you know, like I said a few weeks ago, I think it was our first show that we did almost 7 weeks ago, or maybe in the second show, but I predicted that this violence was going to take place in these facilities, and now we're starting to see that come into fruition, and with the violence that's taking place around these cities, of what's going on with other things, these guys are going to start doing the same thing there, and we already know that the GDC is just not prepared. So, you know, we're going to have to put our heads together and come up with some type of course of action, because this could get really bad before it gets right.
You know, summer quarter packages have the order period has closed on that. All orders are made. And at some point in the next few weeks, those packages will be delivered. And they'll be delivered to people who've been locked down off and on for 4 months by the time they deliver, not able to get soap from commissary, not able to get toilet paper, not able to get ramen noodles from the commissary. The commissaries are out, and here comes their box for the summer. I mean, it's like waving a red flag in front of a bull. These guys are being deprived of damn near everything, including their lives. And you can't back people into a corner and not expect a response. It's not going to be pretty. It's already, this past week was horrifying in terms of the violence and the behavior. It was an escalation like we've not ever seen. And very little attempt that you could discern on the part of Department of Corrections to rectify it.
No, and of course they've set silent this week and not said anything on if they're working on trying to, and which we know they're not. And you know, we can from past from past experiences and past incidents, we know that they're not working on coming up with any ways to prevent future violence from taking place and preventing riots and things like this. So we know that this week they have not come out with any type of statement on all these videos that we're seeing posted online or on various social media platforms. So we know they have no plan. You know, they don't address this stuff. And they don't try to prevent this stuff that goes on. So, you know, maybe they have more important things to do. I don't know.
Joshua, I think we're remiss if we don't speak a little bit about Coastal. Coastal had two incidents this week that, again, will leave you dumbfounded. One was a handicapped inmate in a wheelchair who had his hands behind him, and he tumbled forward out of the chair, and in the process of getting him up and back into the chair, and this is in full view of the inmates, his counselor, a female counselor, and four corrections officers got him up and beat him. Five adults beat him. One of them, a counselor, a female counselor, beat this man. The very next day, two officers caught someone who was naked doing what most humans do, and they dragged him through the dorm and put him in glass cell, and the two of them beat the naked man, who I understand was a small-statured man. They beat him for 15 minutes. And, I mean, oh, that would be in a faith and character dorm. So, going on, and no response from GDC. This isn't going to end well. It doesn't appear there's any plan to end it.
No, and we also know that, you know, it's becoming one of the hottest times of the year, and you know, things are normally more violent, and you know, there's more things going on at this time of the year. So, you know, we'll keep monitoring these situations, and you know, we'll continue to watch what's going on. We'll keep you guys posted. You know, like I said, with some things, hopefully me and Susan can come up with some ideals on voicing our concerns to the GDC and hopefully trying to accomplish something in the regards of this uptick in violence before it becomes even worse than what it is. But like I said, Susan, and you alluded to as well, one of the worst weeks in a long, long time. And like you said, also probably something that we've never seen before.
everybody seems to be suffering from the tension they've been under. And I think that's being generous. In addition, there was an inmate at Rutledge this week who, I believe this was either Wednesday or Thursday night, was told he was going to have to go and he'd be bunking, or not bunking, he'd be sleeping in the gym with the 70 other people, and he bucked, and they beat him. So he didn't end up in the gym that night. He ended up in the hole that night. Wow.
Yeah, so, you know, we're facing, unfortunately, in this country and even in our prison system, we're facing hard times right now with just everything that's going on. And, you know, it's probably going to get a lot worse before it gets better. But hopefully we can, you know, we can work on some positive solutions, try to end some of this, because this, like I said, Susan, you know, when have you ever knew that Georgia prisons were rioting again? And, you know, of course things are going to happen. That's not what I'm saying. It's always, I mean, when you put these guys and these ladies in, you know, with each other, and, you know, you have sometimes in, like in the private prisons, you have over 100 people in one dorm, you know, with different personalities and you know, just different people. So, of course, things are going to happen. But when you have no plan to address the issues, I mean, this is just a preview. And I hope I'm wrong. I mean, I don't want to be right, but this is just a preview. This has written all over it to the GDC. Help. A problem is brewing, and they have every chance right now to try their best to stop this, not be caught off guard like they were with COVID-19. And they have every opportunity right now to put some things in place to have a summer free of riots and violence. And, you know, if they don't step in now, then they're just opening the door to a lot of probably legal action that, you know, is not even necessary. I mean, it doesn't take much to do the right thing. But unfortunately, they don't want to do the right thing. Susan, let's move on to the parole process in Georgia. I think we spent enough time on that for now. But let's move on to the.
Pardon me, I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. So let's move on to the parole process. Where do you want to start with that?
I think, at first glance, Georgia's parole system looks crazy. It looks crazy if you think normally. It's probably the most efficient way of flushing people through a system with the least amount of resources. That's not saying it's good, and I posted on Georgia Prison News as well as on They Have No Voice an excellent article from the Prison Policy Institute on grading the parole systems of the 50 states. And then I posted a spreadsheet comparing Georgia's scores to the scores of Wyoming, which scored the best, and the article acknowledges that Wyoming isn't perfect. Georgia scored a 42 on its parole system. That's a nice solid F. And Wyoming scored an 83. But the first thing people generally see when they start looking at the parole system is, inmates here have no opportunity to go before the board. That does not happen everything about the Georgia Board of Pardons and Paroles is considered confidential. It is a curious and convoluted system, and while there's lots of documents about it, and I posted a lot of them yesterday and today, it's very hard to read through that once and understand it. Yeah, I found that some of the things I had to read a dozen times before I could actually wrap my mind around what it was doing. Part of the problem is it takes a new vocabulary. And so I want to cover those things first. We hear TPM, that's tentative parole month. That is not the month you'll be paroled. That is the month that the Board of Pardons and Paroles schedules your final review for parole. It doesn't mean you're going to get paroled that month. It's speaking to their process in the office of scheduling the review, not to releasing anybody. That's TPM. PED is the parole eligibility date. It's a misconception that that's something that you get to find out later. That PED is set by statute, and it is known from the time the judge bangs his gavel. So the counselors aren't doing you any favor to share the PED with you. And the PED turns out to be the parole date in a good many of the cases, but not all by any means. And it is not mandated that they use the PED. In fact, it's mandated that they use the what they call the grid. The grid is a chart you have to plot. If you remember algebra, you have to plot on your x-axis and your y-axis. The y-axis lists the crime severity levels 1 through 8 in reverse order, so 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, like that. And then across the bottom, it's low, middle, and high. And that's the risk to reoffend. You have a low risk to reoffend, a medium, or a high risk to reoffend. And you can determine the current, you can use the current risk to reoffend tool that's online. This current risk to reoffend went into effect July 1st, 2017. And it is complicated math with all these fractions, and it is an algorithm. And I'm willing to let their online tool do it for me rather than have to spend 10 minutes calculating something. So you need to know your risk to reoffend. You need to know the crime severity level for the primary crime. And there's a chart for that. There are a couple of them. The one you find online is a brief chart with a listing about 80 crimes, but the fact of the matter is there's more like 800 crimes. So if your loved one's particular crime isn't on that short one-pager, you need to ask the webmaster at Pardons and Paroles. And that's webmaster@pap.ga.gov, what your crime severity level is. You need to know that. Crime severity level 1 through 4, they almost certainly will use the grid. At crime severity level 5, 6, 7, it's sort of a mixed bag of if they use the grid or the PED gets involved. There's a lot more variability in the length of the sentences as well. And, of course, with the seriousness of crime. And crime severity level 8 has a set of rules all its own. So that's the area where you'll serve from 65% to 85% of the time you've been given. But in point of fact, if you've got on any of these. If you have a motivated victim, that victim can make you do your time to the door. It bothers me somewhat that the victim can call the parole victim line every month while a person's incarcerated who in some way wronged them. They can call every month. They're not under oath. All they have to do is use the phrase, "fear for my life." And the perpetrator of that crime is going to stay in prison. And there's no way to rebut that. The things you'll need to know, you need to know what set off is. And that's when a parole review has happened and they come back and report to the inmate, "Sorry, not this time. It'll be 1 year or 3 years or 5 years. We're going to set you off until then and review it then." And there are no limits on the number of set-offs that the department, that the pardons and paroles can do. That's a problem. They made you essentially you made a deal in court. "Yes, I did it, and here's my sentence." And then they get to change the deal and say, "No, we think you should stay longer because what you did was just so horrible." And that is a kind of where we go with, is it a subjective or objective reason? An objective reason is you've met all the requirements. There were 25 things you had to do and you've done them all, or you haven't done them all. That's objective. Subjective is a phrase like the horrific nature of the crime and in the best interest of the community. That is simply a way to keep people in prison. By the way, if you aren't aware, one of the five board members is a former commissioner of Department of Corrections. How do you think he votes? Okay, something people don't know about commonly. On the Pardons and Parole website, there's something called the Board Contact Registry. And this is a database that was imported from another website or another iteration of their website. And so there are parts of that Board Contact Registry that don't function. But the Board Contact Registry is where you can go to look to see if you've sent something into the Board of Pardons and Paroles, that something you sent gets logged into the system, and it's the fact that you have contacted them, the board, on behalf of inmate XYZ, that is a public record. It's in the Board Contact Registry, and the Board Contact Registry is divided, I think, into six parts, and the very first one is for people who are writing to protest the death penalty. And, of course, that ticks up, the activity on that ticks up whenever there are executions, rightly so. Another thing that people often don't understand is our Board of Pardons and Paroles does meet, but they meet on issues of technicality, how they're going to operate, changes in laws that affect them. They are meeting about that stuff. If they do anything other than talk about those things, how the board works, if they talk about an inmate or a situation, they go into a secret session or a private session. Otherwise, there's a word you need to know, and it's sequential. Our board does not get together to talk about the offense and the offender. A hearing examiner reads all the documents, and it may take the hearing examiner a month or two to go through all the documents related to an inmate. And that includes everything from the arrest warrant, the evidence, all the way back to the court case, and his institutional or her institutional history, the training, education, any of that, they read everything. And if you want to be heard, you need to send it to them. If you want someone to read it, you need to send it to them. And if they get it and it gets in the board contact registry, the hearing examiner will read it. When the hearing examiner finishes the review of everything, he or she makes a recommendation, basically yes or no, for parole for this inmate, any inmate. But they make a very brief recommendation, and that goes to three board members out of the five, not three together. They don't go meet, and they each vote separately. If they vote 3-0, it's done. That was a majority. But if they're at 2-1 on their vote, they have to go to a fourth in sequence, to a fourth member. And if they have a 2-2 vote with four members, they have to go to the fifth member. And that makes the majority of a 3-2 vote. So a 3-0, a 3-1, or a 3-2 vote, what happens in terms of voting. And there is no way on earth to find out which board member voted how. So just don't waste any time trying to find that. You can't do it. We know about DRs, disciplinary reports. That's institutional behavior, and it is considered in what the hearing examiner looks at. So there's one other thing called a parole packet. And if you want to present an inmate in the very best light possible, a family member or an attorney, anyone can do this. Prepare a series of documents to present the inmate in the most favorable light possible. You want the hearing examiner, that's who's going to read it, to read what you submit and go, my God, why is this guy in prison? Let's get him out. You want to convince, it needs to be persuasive to change the minds of the hearing examiners. So that is possible to do. There's a lot of information online on how to do a parole packet. If you choose to do one, it is going to be helpful to have an attorney review it, simply to save you from yourself, that you haven't written something that sounds crazy or that could be expressed in a better way or can be misconstrued. So that it is helpful to have somebody who reads legalese all day long to review what you've written. Everyone in this prison system should know that their first contact with pardons and paroles occurs during diagnostics and classification. Every person in the Department of Corrections, every inmate, gets interviewed at that time. So the records start almost as soon as someone gets to Jackson. They're starting to compile information about whether or not this person can be paroled. With a short sentence, 2 years or less, the parole review happens at 6 months. Everybody else, the parole review, the initial parole review happens between 9 months and a year. The board uses the GRID guidelines, and remember that was the chart that you plot crime severity level versus risk to reoffend. They use that grid 70% of the time. So 30% of the time they don't use the grid, and they use their own judgment, which they are absolutely permitted to do. Again, I want to mention that the board is heavily influenced by the victim impact statements. A motivated victim will keep an inmate in prison. And they may or may not be telling the truth, but they are taken at their word as if it were sworn testimony. So that's sort of how it works from the wonky side of it. Joshua, can you tell how it works from the side of someone who's in the system? Joshua?
Yeah, can you hear me, Sue?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. I had the button on. I thank you for explaining that. Let's take a just a brief pause, really quick. I'm gonna give the number out just in case someone's listening. We still have a few minutes, but I'm gonna give the number out. If anyone that's listening wants to call in and that wants to have any questions, the number is 516-1865. 516-387-1865. If you have a question on the parole process in Georgia, maybe something that Susan didn't explain, or you don't understand something that she said, feel free to call in and ask this question. Susan, let's take a brief break real quick, just a brief pause, and I'll come back and respond to some things that you just said.
Okay, cool.
Afternoon. You're listening to the Georgia Prison News weekly radio show. I am being joined by Susan Sparks Burns. She is the founder of the Facebook group They Have No Voice and a nonprofit organization, They Have No Voice. And this afternoon we are talking about the parole process in Georgia. And before we went to break, Susan gave our listeners some very good information on how the parole process works in Georgia. And, Susan, I definitely thank you for giving that information because it's very useful. But I think, you know, we need to talk about also how broken this parole system is. As Susan alluded to, there is a bunch of hurdles that you have to jump to just to find out your loved one's crime severity level. You have to find out if they're even going to use the grid to even are they going to go by the grid to determine when someone will be parole eligible. You know, so there is a lot of stuff that is a joke with the system, the parole system here in Georgia. Susan, I think the parole system is broken. I think that you have people that are sitting in prison now for very minor offenses, where there's a probation violation or a parole violation or whatever. You know, you have people sitting there that's been sitting there for way longer than they should have been sitting there. And that's because the parole board has decided that they're going to go off the grid or they're, as you alluded to, someone has called and complained about that person receiving parole. And Susan, I'm taking it somewhere.
And I wanted to talk about the parole process in different states, because it's fine in Indy, and I'm definitely not saying anything about victims, or I'm not saying that. So I hope no one takes it the wrong way of what I'm saying. But and let's just use for an example the state of Nevada. And more states do this as well, but let's just use Nevada. So when somebody comes up for parole in Nevada, they take that person in front of the full parole board. Now, it would make sense to me that when someone is up for parole, that person would go into a room with these people that's making the decision. I mean, let's use this as an example too. For someone that's been incarcerated for 10, 15 years, a lot of stuff happens. Like I said, they're in prison, so we know things happen. But you can have numerous things that can get in your parole file that will not be in the most favorable light for that person. I mean, you can be dealing with a counselor that's, you know, just not having a good day, or you cannot be having a good day and something was to happen. So, you know, my point is this, to use this system that's so outdated, instead of taking these individuals in front of the parole board and preventing them and actually shedding the light and letting that board ask them questions on some things that were in their file, they continue to use an outdated system that doesn't even – I don't even think it works. I mean, you know, you have people that's been locked up for 15, 20 years that get set off, and they don't even know why. Susan, and you can correct me if I'm wrong as well, Georgia process may be one of the most secretive in this country when it comes to this board making decisions. No one knows anything. Am I right about that?
Absolutely correct.
So, you know, I think that, you know, for them to continue to use this outdated system, and Susan gave you the grade on the system, but, you know, the system is behind. You know, you can supposed to be released in April, and you're still sitting in prison waiting on a parole date. You know, Susan alluded to it. You can be told by the judge that, you know, it's your sentencing, whether you plead guilty or you found guilty or whatever, that, you know, you're gonna do this certain amount of time, but once you get into the prison system, the parole board is like you've been sentenced again to do more time than that judge or that jury wanted you to do in the first place, because of their, and I call it, they're getting tough on crime, being tough on crime, where, you know, and they have no clue, Susan, if that person has been reformed. The only thing they're doing is they're going and they're reading, they're having someone read a file, and that person is making a recommendation on if parole should be granted or denied. They're not learning the person. They're not learning the if that person's been reformed, if that person's been changed. They're not learning too much of anything. I just personally think that our parole system here in Georgia, with almost 60,000 people incarcerated in our system, that they could come up with a better way of doing things at the parole board. I mean, Susan, you know, like you said earlier, you got when you first go through Jackson, you're initiating that process. And do you know that when you go through Jackson, you're told one thing, and then that doesn't pan out to be true. Because that person is just giving you an opinion on what they think may transpire. But when that hearing examiner is preparing your file to be voted on,
that person can come up with could have very different thoughts than what that parole officer told you in Jackson. You know, so you know, I think our parole system is broken. I think it's very unfair. I think that, you know, they're all about get tough on crime, and you know, I personally believe that, and like I said, just my own personal opinion that people on those parole boards should be elected officials. They should be elected to sit on the board. That way, if they don't do right, if they don't, you know, if then they could be held accountable at the ballot box. So, like I said, that's just my opinion on how the system is totally outdated and how it needs to be fixed. And Susan, I'll kind of let you get in. We can have a discussion about this because we still have some time.
Joshua, there's two things people ought to know, and it helps you understand this thing. The amount of time that each of the board members spends on a case, on determining how they're going to vote, and then casting their vote yay or nay for parole, 3 to 5 minutes. They also review about 500 people a week each. They're all doing it. But 3 to 5 minutes, that's how much time you get after 20 years or however long you've been in. That's not very much time for them to contemplate much of anything. I think this is an awful system. It's all kept a secret, and the inmate has no choice but to accept it. Horrible.
Yeah, and like I said, Susan, what sense does it make when you don't even have in the regard to bring that person before you and to let them tell you, and you ask them any question that you want to ask them about their crime, about their time in prison, about something that troubled you in their file, they don't do that. They're appointed to the board by the governor, and this governor in Georgia has given the board the complete authority to handle all issues with the corrections and with anything to do with parole in the state. This governor has given the board total authority. And I think that Susan, that at some point, I don't know, but there needs to be some type of change to the parole process in Georgia. It doesn't work. They came out with this BS about they were going to start releasing these offenders with the due to the COVID-19. And how hard was it to release these people, and especially the seniors and the older people, and put them on house arrest and put an ankle monitor on them? And let them be out of harm's way, but they wouldn't even do that. You're dealing with cold and heartless people who are just on the board to receive a check. Like you alluded to, and I think the listeners, it's very important to know these board members, the hearing examiners do all of the work.
Yes.
And 9 times out of 10, that recommendation that the hearing examiner makes, the parole board goes along with that recommendation that hearing examiner makes. So they're not doing the work for the money. They're continuing to go in a outdated system that's not working. And their main stance is being tough on crime. Their main stance is, something that's not working, and it shows that it's not working. Susan, go ahead.
We've got any number. I will try to enumerate it between now and next week. any number of people who've been in 25, 30 years have been set off 5, 6 times. If you're going to include these set off, and not every state does that by any means, if you're going to do that, limit them, maybe 2 at the most. The judge gave them a sentence, and the parole board in Georgia has the authority to override that sentence. It's as simple as that. We have such good technology, just like you were saying, an ankle monitor, a house arrest. Why could these inmates not be on like a Zoom meeting and have the 5 board members ask them questions? Now, in the state of Texas, I believe they have 21 board members, and they don't all meet. There's not 21 of them making the decisions. It's as if they've got 4 or 5 little groups, so that everybody doesn't review every inmate. That makes a lot of sense to me in some ways, that the same inmate isn't coming up a second or third time in front of the very same 5 people who've already told him no time and again. Our system here is quite jarring to people when they find out, when they're put in the position of, I'm coming up for parole, I'm eligible for parole. And then they find out, not if we say you're not.
Yeah,
and they can do that.
Right. And everyone that's listening to the show now and the ones that will listen later, Susan, it needs to be said, and a lot of people get this misconstrued and a lot of people get this wrong, and their loved ones, I think it's a combination of they think this or it's stuff that they've heard, or it's even some disinformation that their counselor is telling them. But a PED does not mean that they're going to be released on this date. A TPM, as Susan said, does not even mean that they're going to be released on that. It's a tentative parole month. And as I can tell you now, Susan, just because that TPM comes up, there is hundreds and thousands of people in this 60,000 member prison system that are way past now their TPM, maybe 6 months, a year, 2 years, but past their TPM. That and they've been out, they stayed out of trouble. They've completed their classes, they've completed their case plan, and they're just ready, and they're still sitting in our prison population because of whatever reason, and we don't know the reason, because the system is so secretive that we don't know why the board has decided to keep these people incarcerated. I mean, you know, they have a 10-year sentence, and they've done 8 years off of that 10-year sentence, and they're still sitting in prison. It's been made clear that the judge has, you know, told them, we're going to give you 8 years, but they still have, we're going to give you 10 years, but we want you to serve 8 of those. And they're going on 9 years, still been served in prison. You know, it makes absolutely no sense. And as Susan just alluded to, a few minutes ago, that the parole board has the right to make a decision on to go beyond what that sentencing judge make a decision and override whatever that sentencing judge or whatever that jury time that they gave. And that's why I go and I say that our system is broken, Georgia's not serious about clearing the population from the prison of the prison system and releasing people. You know, so like I said, Susan, this system is broke. You know, why should you have to go and it be so hard to calculate when your loved one will possibly be released from prison? Why is that hard?
I do know how this new, the one that went into effect in 2017, how it came about. They worked on it for about 2 years, and it was the board members as well as the chair and several of the prominent post-conviction relief attorneys worked on it. And I did work through it one time with the math, and my goal was to verify that the tool online worked, you know, just like the formula said, and it does work. But they've got, you know, this more recent one that takes into account how many times you've been arrested, not how many times you've been found guilty.
Right, not many times you've been convicted, right.
And what about innocent until proven guilty? Nope. In this case, it's arrest. Another thing interesting about this change was they far more heavily weight property crimes. So if you've been arrested a lot and were managed to not be convicted for whatever reason, you're arrested and they drop the case, I'm sorry, you were still arrested. That counts. What's wrong with that? Everything. And the property crime is sort of an interesting thing. So it's different, and I would just say don't try to do the math. It is freakishly hard. And I mean, you can do it, but you might as well use the tool that's online for the current one. The previous risk to reoffend tools are actually a list of questions. You answer the question, you add it up, and if your score between a -3 and a +2, you're a low risk to offend. And then if you're a 3 to 6 or 8 or whatever, you're a medium risk to offend. So that I can kind of understand. It's actually very straightforward. The new one is not, and it makes me a bit uncomfortable that in the case of calculating when Johnny's going to get his parole, we're asking how many times was he arrested and not how many times was he convicted. But those are believed to be the social tools that are important, the social clues that are important. But it's different from the years before. And
right.
Like I said, the tool there is the tool.
All right. And also, Susan, and I want to touch on this, and I won't go into it a lot, but people, you need to be careful who you allow to do these parole packets, and you need to be careful with what they tell you that they're going to do on these parole packets and all the stuff that, I mean, you need to read and you need to ask many questions if you're going to do a parole packet. And I'm not advocate for or against. I personally have my own opinions on parole packets, but I won't get into it because it's just, like I said, it's just my opinion, and my opinion does not matter in your situation on whatever you want to do. But I will say this. If you're going to do a parole packet, you need to do this with a licensed attorney. There's licensed attorneys out there in both groups, and they have no voice in Georgia Prison News that will very much gladly take your money to do a parole packet. But you know that this person that's going to do it hopefully will be 100% legitimate and one will be will do that parole packet to the best of their ability. I won't give their names. I won't give them free advertisement because they make enough money. But there are licensed attorneys out there that will do these packages, but you need to not give your money to anyone. That's enough I'll say on that right now, because I'm getting pissed off about even talking about this, because I'll go even further. But I won't do that right now. But anyway, please be careful. You know, when you decide that you want to do a parole packet, and I will say that there's just some people out there that's not in, that doesn't have this at their best interest to do those parole packets. So, Susan, go ahead, take the, go ahead, and mute me, Susan, before I get in trouble.
folks, if you're listening, you've just been given a very good piece of advice. If you hire an attorney, or you're contemplating hiring an attorney, go to their AVO, A-V-Z-O, AVO reviews. You need to read their reviews. You don't want to find out after you've written a $10,000 check that this person had three reviews, has been practicing law 30 years, they have three reviews, and their clients hate their guts. And then you look at a different attorney that would charge the identical amount, who has 75 reviews for working the same period of time, and their clients love them. They don't necessarily love their personalities or anything else like that. They love the results they get. Not all attorneys do that. There are plenty in the post-conviction relief arena who get some really awful reviews because they behave really awfully, or they say they'll tell the client, or at least the person writing the check, we've got a hearing coming up, and then you follow up and call the court and find out when the hearing is. There's no hearing scheduled. You're not on any docket. I don't want my lawyer lying to me. So be very careful. Their reputation, you only get one shot at this. You're not going to do a parole packet and come back in 5 years and do it again. You get one shot at this, and it needs to be as good as possible coming out of the gate. So a professional that really specializes in this area of practice, and it's called post-conviction relief, covers a lot of areas and includes habeas cases and so forth, far more complicated than a parole packet. But the ones who do it and do it well are absolutely essential, because there's another side to that coin, that there's plenty of people that will take your money and not do it well. Read the AVO review.
Yep, and like I say, if you are in either one of our groups, like I said, there's experienced attorneys in those in our groups that that I personally know, and I'm sure Susan knows as well, that will gladly answer your questions if you message them and whatever. They'll help you out or lead you in the right direction. Like I said, just please do your homework when it comes to it. Like Susan said, you only have one shot, and you need to have it. Make sure that it's the right shot and to get it done and whatever. So most definitely, like I say, read the reviews. Do your research, and like I said, I like them home just as much as you would, and the system cleaned out as much as you would, but it needs to be done the right way. So Susan, let's down as we start to close the show. I think we have like 9 minutes maybe. As we start to close the show, let's go ahead and give the list. I'll give the listeners a preview of next week's show. We will have next week we'll have as a guest attorney Fannie Willis. She is she's an attorney, and she's running for district attorney of Fulton County.
Now, next week, I want to have her on just to ask her some questions regarding what she will do as far as how she will handle sentences and things of that nature if she was to win the district attorney's office. And the reason why I don't have her on, and you don't have to agree with her platform, or if you do or you don't, you're more than welcome to call in and ask her about some things next week. But why I want to have her on is because I think just from reading on the internet and things like that, I think Paul Howard is in serious trouble and is possibly going to lose that seat, Susan, from what it looks like from all the news reports of the misconduct and the stuff that's coming to light. I think he's very much in danger of losing that seat. And it's possibly going to be to one of the two candidates that's running against him. Well, it's not possible. He's going to lose that seat to one of the two people that he's running against. So I want to have her on next week to talk about, you know, what she will do. I've heard some of her positions on what she will do differently. And, you know, but I also want to kind of give her an opportunity to discuss how she would oppose or not oppose some of the post-conviction relief that, you know, that her office will be handling along with the Attorney General office. So, you know, I think their office will work hand in hand with the Attorney General office. And I know that, and Susan knows as well, that there's a lot of people in now that's kind of just waiting for Paul Howard to get out of the way before they and start that stuff. So next week we will be talking to her, and you know a lot of this stuff, you know, if your loved one is going to prison or on their way in the county jail waiting, or you know in their or in the county jail, you know, this stuff is going to be important in deciding, you know, how much time they get and stuff like that. So, Susan, go ahead.
You know, if people are listening and hearing, well, that's Fulton County. It doesn't have anything to do with me. That is probably the most influential district attorney in the state, whoever it is, no matter who it is, in Fulton County. They get a lot of very high-profile cases. And just as Joshua said, there are plenty of people in prison whose lives are on hold. They're sitting there waiting for Paul Howard to get out because of perhaps there was misconduct or something involved in their case, but they have no prayer of going anywhere with that while he's there and able to defend their actions. What typically happens when the district attorney in Atlanta changes or in Fulton County changes is they pretty well clean house and get their own people to be in significant in key positions. And we're looking forward to that. It will certainly be a regime change that's welcome.
Yeah, most definitely. So most definitely. So if you want to call in next week, Susan, we have to do something to kind of get our callership up a little bit and our interaction on the show, because I know that there's a lot of people that have questions. They listen to the show live and they have questions. So we got to kind of, you know, maybe come up with a segment where we can get some more people to call in. But if you want to call in next week and talk to Fannie Willis or, like I said, I know her personally. She's a very nice lady. And like I said, I've listened to some of her answers in the previous forums and debates that they've had. And it seems like that she wants to do the right thing. But we'll ask her next week and kind of see, you know, where she stands on some issues. Susan, I'm sure you'll have some questions and are whatnot ready to go for her, and you know, but I hope some of our callers and listeners, or some of our listeners, will call in and, you know, ask questions, you know, that some important questions. So, Susan, anything you want to share in the closing minutes that we have left here?
I just like to encourage anyone who's listened to join our group on Facebook. They have no voice. We got some really meaningful things going on. We had a nice success this past week. It may sound like something small, but it turns out to be kind of important. I got in touch with Jennifer Ammons, the general counsel for GDC, and sent her a letter regarding the supplier of mayonnaise to the GDC. And I was told yesterday that the food services director has withdrawn all that mayonnaise from the prisons. So awesome. it doesn't sound like much, but most of the time you don't know what happens with whatever you report or send to the GDC. In this case, I know that that did happen. But join us. We are all about the civil rights of inmates. And I've been involved in this area for about 3 years before I realized that there's actually a law that gives, that guarantees inmates rights under the Eighth Amendment, the freedom from cruel and unusual punishment. The CRIPA law details those rights, and you'd better believe our inmates in the state of Georgia are not being given those rights. Their rights are not protected. They have the right to life. That's the First Amendment right, but they have that one too. With that, I'll close and thank everyone for being here today, and thank you, Joshua, for allowing me to be a part of this.
Absolutely. Until next week, guys, we hope that you'll join Georgia Prison News and They Have No Voice to keep updated with things that's going on. And we'll catch everyone next week at 12 p.m. Eastern Time. We hope that everyone have a good rest of the afternoon. I can't talk in these closing moments. And a good weekend. And we'll catch you guys next week. Thanks, Susan.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody.